Reconnect with CUNY. Whether you are a first-time college student, a parent, a veteran, or an adult with some college credits, there's a place for you to continue your dreams or start fresh. No matter where you are along your journey, the CUNY Reconnect program can provide financial assistance and one-on-one personalized support to get you going. It's not too late to start again. Go to cuny.edu/reconnect today.
Look, it's Ebro in the morning. Laura Stiles, Rosenberg, you had to jump out. Shiny Culture's here. MSNBC presents Black Men in America, The Road to 2024. I'm assuming this is about voting. We have Tremaine Lee and Charles Coleman.
Yes.
Civil rights attorney, Charles Coleman. Yes, do I got to say the civil rights part?
You don't have to say the civil
rights. That's an important part, though.
That's an important part.
It is. I mean, you know, I like hearing it, so why not?
Well, you guys are hosting a program that airs this Sunday, 9 o'clock, MSNBC.
Yes, sir.
What is this about?
Yo, you know what? A rare collaboration. You know, we decided to join forces. Black men are missing in so many spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And with the 2024 election upon us, a very crucial moment, we said, you know, invisible no more. Mm-hmm. Let's go around the country, talk to brothers, get some insight into how they're approaching the White House, mm-hmm. how they're approaching Biden, how their lived experience mm-hmm. are manifesting in the way they're thinking about politics. And so we decided, again, to team up, go to MSNBC, gave us a whole hour, which is rare. You rarely see an hour dedicated to black men and black men in politics especially. And so here we are, 9 p.m.
So we talk a lot about politics on Ebro in the morning. Racial dynamics, politics, economics. We also goof around a lot and talk a lot of shit. But I guess, Shani, you say we cover politics more than in a way that's probably more, I mean, at least we've been told that we cover it in a way that's more deliberate as well as, I guess, in your face than any other program.
When you're talking about a hip-hop station, hip-hop-based station, this is probably one of the top political content shows that are on the air for
now,
sure,
and in a palatable way. So much so that a lot of politicians don't even come by.
Scared.
I don't want to say that they're scared as much as it's kind of like, you're not finna tell us what we can and can't talk about or ask about. And you know, a lot of the big name politicians, they want a little bit more control. I think also too, because we're local, we're mm-hmm. more focused on New York City. We're not a national platform. So if you're a politician that has a national profile and you're trying to work national, we're not the show that's going to be on your slate.
But I think that's accurate and it's appropriate. If you are thinking about the format of what Hot 97 is in terms of its history, its roots, and where it comes from, and what it's meant to the culture, if you weren't discussing hip hop, I mean, if you weren't discussing politics,
you've been missing the mark.
How could you really call yourself a part of the culture? Like hip hop. Yeah. Has had politics in its DNA forever. And so mm-hmm. these conversations, like literally
yeah.
from the message forward, yeah. mm-hmm. that's all politics. Fight the power, self-destruction, all in the same game. That's all politics.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and F the police, again, we could go down the list over and over and over again. And so in order to be what Hot 97 is, it has to honor the DNA that also has politics as a part of hip hop. And I think that that's really about where the special hits a really important intersection. Black people, black men, we are having these conversations all the time.
For sure.
People right. don't understand yeah. that. And so it was very important for Tremaine and me to take the viewers to those spaces so that they could see and understand, oh no, we are absolutely discussing these
informed.
Issues. And
very
informed. And that's why I think people are really going to love what we come out with on Sunday.
And intentional, because the way we live and die in America is political. Mm-hmm. When we're hungry and our bellies are burning, that's political. Mm-hmm. Right? When the cops are stopping you every single day, that's political. And sometimes I think,
when y'all telling us what hairstyles we can and can't wear to work in school, it's political.
Brothers getting suspended and kicked out of school because of their locks.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of times, you know, we are ignored by politicians. They don't want to come to black men especially. And certainly we understand that black women play such a crucial role, especially for the Democratic Party. But when it comes to black men, we are literally missing, right? And so brothers are saying, you know, come talk to us. Come see us. If you want our votes, you can't just come pandering at the last minute. Mm-hmm. And so it's important for us to make sure we're taking people intentionally to the community.
So one of the things we spend a lot of time on the show and have over the years, obviously the conversation that takes up most of the air is the national convo, whoever that is at the time, right? The presidents and, you know, blah, blah, blah. We often push back, though, and try to really encourage people to focus on local, right? So someone like AOC, who we had up here before anybody knew her on a national level, we helped get her elected. Jamal Bowman, someone else we helped get elected on this program. The Brooklyn DA, right, who, you know, has been instrumental in getting people out of prison and helping us deal with marijuana offenses, things like that. Alvin Bragg was here early, some of these people. So Mayor Adams used to come up
before he
got the job.
Yeah, I mean, then when he was in the street.
And he was with French Montana.
And we ain't hearing from him no more.
You got to get with French or a Dipset or somebody else.
Yeah, he
want to
hang
them.
With rappers.
You'll find them there.
Well, and really people who won't challenge him, let's be honest.
That part. No.
And I told him to his face, you can go look up the interview, I had told him to his face, I had a problem with him many years ago when he was the borough president of Brooklyn. They put up billboards all over Brooklyn telling black men to pull their pants up, and I thought it was inappropriate.
Wow. Yeah.
Right? Why would you on a public scale try to reprimand young black men, right, for political gain?
As a black man.
I have a problem with that.
Right. And now, you should.
And by the way, and I agree, there's a time and place for you to be wearing your pants how you want to wear your pants, but you got to know how to fit in and code switch and do things to move along in society. Every environment is not going to accept you as you are around your way, right? Mm-hmm. And we live in a racialized world where black men have been ostracized, racialized, marginalized, all the eyes, mm-hmm. right? And so for us to take care of our families and our communities, we gotta go out into a world that don't really fuck with us.
That's right.
Right, and figure out how we're gonna get to that bread. And that's part of our challenge.
Yeah, gotta be so nimble. I don't think people understand, not only with the weight of the world on our shoulders, in our families, in our communities, and in the workplace. And you gotta step on eggshells and dodge the glass and be bilingual and trilingual and speak all the different languages. Yeah. And that wears us down. And if we look at what's happening in terms of men more broadly outside of black men, there is a crisis right now of depression and isolation. As we're getting older, we're having less social engagement with folks. And so we're bearing the weight of all of this silently. And then again, and then there's parallel between the way we're experiencing that in everyday life and the way we're experiencing that in politics.
And I think
the way we're pushed out of the door sometimes and pushed out of the window.
I think people need to understand, and Ebro, you may not remember, the last time you and I rapped like in studio was years ago. I was working on another project, Black Brilliance 360. Mm. And we started talking about sort of like, our conversation went crazy. It was like food deserts, and we talked about a lot of different things. People don't understand or don't necessarily process racism and the issue of race in America as the public health crisis that it is. Mm-hmm. So you talk about locally the impact of race and what that looks like. It impacts where you live. It impacts where you go to school. It impacts what you learn.
The air
it impacts
the air you breathe.
The access that you have, environmental factors like your air, your ability to get rest, like, you know what I'm saying, how much things cost you.
And it's not by accident. When you look at New York City, a man named, y'all can Google it, a man named Robert Moses planned these roads in these cities to inflict harm, both economically and environmentally, on black folks, and specifically black folks, but poor people too.
Correct, poor people. And so these things are systemic. So when you talk about our connection, be it on a local or a national level, that processing, like, yo, this is a, when you hear public health crisis, you think about policy. You say, that's something that needs to be addressed through policy. Yes. And all of these things that are literally bearing down on us from a community standpoint, from an individual standpoint, from the local level on up, they are policy connected. They are connected to politics. They are
literally
connected
literally killing us, whether it's explicitly killing us or in the abstract. That stress, you talk about lack of rest. Right, black people on average get an hour and a half less sleep, which leads to cardiac issues, high blood pressure,
unstable emotions.
So now you're all twisted and bound up.
Then you factor in the food,
right,
and these other factors that you know.
So our engagement in terms of the local aspect of what we're talking about is just as critical, if not more, than they are on a national level. Just understanding the interconnectivity, because a lot of people, unfortunately, the way that things are presented, and that's, I think, one of the tenets of the special that we were very intentional about. Oftentimes, the way that things are presented around the political conversation does not frame things in a way where someone says, why does this matter to me? Like, yeah, you're having this conversation about CRT in Florida, and I get it. I want proper narratives being told about my history and my culture. But ultimately, if I got three kids that I'm trying to support on.
I don't give a damn about what you're
right,
talking
that's
about.
Not really, that's right. Not really moving
the money.
The needle.
At? Who's
right.
Helping me get to the money?
Where's the bag? How am I going to get to, you know.
How are my kids' schools?
Right. Those are the things that matter. And so what we wanted to do with this special and hopefully what becomes a franchise at MSNBC.
Pressure. You're putting the pressure on them now.
That's
hopefully it's a franchise.
That's exactly,
as you should.
Exactly,
as you should.
Yo,
right?
Joy, Ari.
Yeah, that's good.
Right.
Don't get us up here wilding, y'all. Take care of these brothers.
There you go, right?
Listen,
so
you know
what we wanted
talk.
To do with this special and what we wanted to do with, you know, like I said, hopefully this franchise is to frame things in a way that gets the public and the viewer to really sort of make that connection to those conversations that we are seeing about policy initiatives and what that looks like in their everyday lives. Because we're having the everyday life conversation, but we're not always making the connections.
So let's dig a little deeper. So I've been in media 30 years, and mostly, yeah, all of it have been around hip-hop media, radio specifically. And one thing I've learned is that most corporations have a hard time finding, talk and speaking to black men, which in turn, what ends up happening is they go, well, we don't know how to, where do they hang out? Where do they socialize, right? Because when they do their research, you know, and they go out and they trying to ask a black man questions on the street or call a phone or get you to click on an email or, why are you asking me all these questions?
Right.
Yeah. And who are you?
Yeah.
Right, so there's a lot, and rightfully so, there's some paranoia when it comes to dealing with the institutions, even in healthcare, right? Where it's like, black dudes be like, I don't know if I want to go to the hospital,
give me all this information, collecting all this data. Yeah. I don't
know. You know,
not only that, but I don't even know if I trust what you're telling me I'm supposed to be taking.
Yeah, you know what the problem is? Facts. I remember I was there. I was the first national reporter to write about Trayvon. No national reporter did that. I was on the ground in Ferguson early. And I remember those early days in Ferguson when it's on fire and when it's fluorescent, ground zero. And we were having all these conversations about the lack of diversity in the police force. And then on this side of the police state, though, look at the media, we look exactly the same. And so when your newsroom reflects that same kind of segregation, there's no way that's going to be reflected, right, adversely,
right,
the other side. So there's no way you're going to be able to talk to black men if you have no black men in
the newsroom. Thing in advertising agencies, right? Where are there black men in advertising agencies?
Right.
Are there black folks? Like, I know that, you know, and shout to the black folks that are there,
right,
but what positions do we hold?
Mm-hmm.
And here's the other part that makes this even more complicated. When you're talking about the black population in the United States, we make up 14% of the population, right? And where are we spending our money? And do we control how we spend our money to make sure that we make an impact on these companies so that they have to talk to us? The Hispanic population does do that. Right?
Yeah.
The Asian population does do that. If you're not speaking to us, we're not buying your shit. And so black folks, oftentimes, we don't require these companies to speak to us. Same thing with politics.
Mm-hmm.
Are we requiring these individuals to come speak to us? And furthermore, do we make up a large enough swath of the population to make an impact? The answer is yes, because strategically we're located.
Absolutely.
But I think that's the dig in where people really gotta understand, because I often tell Shani, without Detroit, Philly,
can't win.
Milwaukee,
can't win. Chicago, 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 can't win.
2020.
Houston, you can't
Houston.
Win.
The problem
right?
we're in survival mode though. So I think certainly
right.
that, you know, we should be harnessing our power and our energy, but we're always being pragmatic and practical because we're just trying to survive. So a lot of times we don't have the luxury and the privilege to sit back and pontificate
right.
and politicians and have the salons. But we out here scrambling.
Right. It's
out here hungry, out here dodging bullets.
It's also, I don't necessarily, and this is also something that really was the impetus behind the work that Tremaine and I have done. It's not necessarily just coming to talk to us, because a lot of times that turns into talking at us.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Is sit down and have a conversation with us,
mm-hmm.
right? Like,
a good faith and not a cynical.
Yeah,
a good faith,
right. Like, you know,
sit down for real.
You come into my church and sitting in the pulpit and telling me everything you've done for black people when you was 15, you came 15 minutes late and you leave 30 minutes early. Well, I don't really get a chance to actually interact with you, but you go on social media and say, oh, I was at so-and-so, so-and-so.
You know, it's worse though, they're like, souls to the polls. And I hate that.
Right, right, right,
don't
right.
Come, don't it's come, all, and gawk at people catching the Holy Ghost. It's just, well, like, it's, about it, bringing souls on. To the polls and put a little twang in their voice.
Is that what they said?
And they do every
cycle. That's one of the mechanisms.
I miss souls to the polls.
Souls to the polls, that's crazy.
So where that came from is, it came from, and there was a lot of controversy around it. It really sort of emanated in the South primarily, where the black church is still very much the thing. So what happened was, you had early voting, and early voting would go on through the weekend. And so they would, like, either on Saturday or on Sunday, have initiatives like Souls to the Polls,
buses.
Where they would get buses and take people to church. The issue that I have in terms of our current discourse, and this is the part that I think as a community, we've got to take some level of responsibility to, our political discourse could be, and it needs to be, more sophisticated. And what I mean by that is, all we sort of do is like, register to vote, go vote. That's the end of the conversation for us.
Facts.
We don't learn how things work. We don't learn how to hold people accountable. Like, in our minds, the only system of accountability that we have is, oh, we got to wait for another election. That's the only thing that we can really do. That's the only thing we ever do.
And they don't
do.
Put money into it until GOTV get out the vote, the literal last minute.
That's
as
it.
As opposed to building that voter education, building that loyal block of voters,
right.
That machine. Instead, it's the last minute. Here's some money to get souls to the polls. Here's some, right. You know, little bread for your pockets.
Souls to keep polls. Moving.
They want to get you at the entry level. Mm-hmm. But they don't necessarily want you to participate in the process.
And then blame black people when they don't win the election. Oh, look, they ain't turned out in Milwaukee. Philly ain't come out. Well, you weren't there in the beginning. Yeah, you should have been there 6 months ago building that loyalty.
Right. So how successful is voter education? Because that's really the bottom line.
Yeah.
And I say it all the time, too. I'm like, most people, to me, vote ignorantly.
Well, yeah,
they vote based on the marketing and promotion.
You can remove the word voter and say, how successful is
education?
Because,
and get my answer.
He's absolutely right.
But I'm saying, so if that's the bigger problem here, that people are just waiting for the next marketing politician, and then they're waiting for
the
that vote.
The next celebrity, the next
That's painting the best narrative for you, like, how are you getting people to really be a part of this voting process and trust the process?
Right. Well, I think Ebro hit the nail on the head. I mean, you have to first and foremost understand what voting and the system itself can do for you and is supposed to do for you and how it fits within larger systems. Now, if you don't understand those connections, telling you the value of voting by itself, like as an abstract in a silo, is not going to make sense. Part of what we as a community, I'm speaking specifically to Black America, are facing is that we don't necessarily have a political ideology. I'm going to give us a quick history lesson. After Reconstruction, I'll make it as basic as possible. Our political ideology was, yo, give us a hammer, give us our nails, give us our saw, and we're going to go over here and we're going to build our own table. We're going to sit at our own table, we're going to build our own table, we make it work for us. At some point, for various reasons, you get Greenwood, you get Tulsa, you get a whole bunch of other things.
It's not various. It's white supremacy.
Right, okay. In various iterations.
Yes.
Folks were like, we can't even have our own table without
y'all burning it down.
Mm-hmm. All right, fine. Then we shifted to another political ideology, which is kind of sort of where we've been, which is, yo, we've earned a right at your table. Make space for us. Give us space to sit down. All right, fine. As a community, the first thing that we have to do is decide, even if it's on the individual level, what is my political ideology? I'm going to vote, but why? What am I doing it for?
Break that down further real quick. Yeah. When you say ideology,
sure.
What do you exactly mean?
I am talking about, you are going to vote, and what are you expecting, or what do you believe, or what are you demanding that this system is supposed to do? Not necessarily from a specific policy angle, but from a general angle of, and that's why I said ideological, are you looking for control over your own community in such a way that allows you to self-determine, or are you looking for more support or control from the government? That's a basic example of your ideology in terms of how you move. I mean, this is to your point about education. This is seventh grade civics. This is like federalism versus states' rights. It really does come down to that. We as a community like to do things like say, vote blue no matter who. Anybody but Trump. That's not a political ideology,
bro. Let me jump in right here. I'd argue, though, that we are actually, as a block, those who participate, those don't, actually more sophisticated than we give ourselves credit for. Because let's go back to Reconstruction, the failed promise of 40 acres and a mule, the failed promise of an allotment of land so we could build our own nation. I think people understand the limitations of government. We're asking to get water out of a piece of wood. Right, we're
that's squeezing. That's Philly accent. You said water. It's water.
This John, man. Listen. But seriously, I think we understand the system more than we get credit for, because we know as long as the system continues to fail us, then how are we convincing a brother to come participate?
And to your point,
Reconnect with CUNY. Whether you are a first-time college student, a parent, a veteran, or an adult with some college credits, there's a place for you to continue your dreams or start fresh. No matter where you are along your journey, the CUNY Reconnect program can provide financial assistance and one-on-one personalized support to get you going. It's not too late to start again. Go to cuny.edu/reconnect today.
And this is where Shawnee's usually at with it. We already know the system fails us.
I was just about to say that.
So why are we, well, and for someone like yourself, mm-hmm. the real reason you don't vote is mostly emotional. Right. It's not even, you don't want to be a part of the emotional roller coaster of failed promises.
And the investment of time and energy in a system that doesn't feel like they invest in us.
And
I wanted to ask, in a country where, in this country, do you feel like people of color feel protected by the politics of the system?
Without people question, of color or no. Black people specifically?
Yeah.
I would say black people feel that we are constantly under the gun. And we see at every turn, whether it's our water in Flint, Michigan, literally being poisoned. Do we realize that in 2022, police killed more people than they ever have on record, and nothing was burning, and nothing... These are communities experiencing the weight of this trauma and violence every single day. Mm-hmm. That very real violence of the policeman's gun and the abstract violence of your water is poisoned.
For sure.
So I think that there's zero doubt. Black people don't feel protected. Not only they right. feel exploited and used and abused, because we see
all
it
the time.
Every single cycle. So it's incumbent not necessarily upon us, let's do that civic and voter education, but when these politicians are going to deliver a program that is specific towards black people. I've been around this country reporting on this stuff for years. And the one thing I hear time and again is, when are they going to come with a program for us? Everyone else gets protection, right? Even other marginalized groups are getting pats on the back and we got you and some legislation.
Right.
What about black people? And now we're seeing...
And how long are we going to hold our breath for that?
And what are you going to expect after people are starving?
My first spark when people say that is always, they're not.
Then exactly.
They're not. Unless you force them to.
I think,
and how do you force them to?
And so that's a great question. I'm so glad we're having this conversation. Number one, another thing about political ideology, which I do say as a sticking point, you have to have a non-negotiable somewhere. You have to have a line. And as voters, too.
Black people have a line.
Do we though?
Because
92% of us voting for Democrats
election. That's the line. So no, but and here's why: racism, white supremacy. We are not voting, obviously some are. We are not voting for the candidate that the white supremacist racists like.
But Ebro,
I'm not saying it's right or wrong.
That's where we're also confused, that there aren't white supremacists
on the
all
left.
Over the
no,
place.
Let me add a word. Overt.
Right. Okay, yeah, right. Overt. Right.
We are not voting for the overt white supremacy candidate.
I think we need to be a little bit more aggressive where we put that line. But that's an individual choice. But to answer your question,
but if my point is, we have a line. There's clearly a line.
But that doesn't. But
it's
that,
fuzzy.
So let's. It's
does
fuzzy.
It work?
And it moves.
No.
And it
here's
moves.
The thing.
And it moves.
But,
it moves.
But, yes. But here's the thing. If that's your line, right? Let's do it in reverse. Mm-hmm. If your line is overt white supremacists, then your demand, your only hard demand
just
becomes
quietly.
Don't be an overt racist.
Do it quietly.
That's your only demand.
But that would be
that's
nice.
Nuts.
That would be nice.
Put your suit in the back,
man.
Right.
Put your
take your robe.
And it's like at least lie out of my face, because they feel like politics
are
alive.
But
I want
to go back to what Shawnee said real quick, though, because it's really important, especially in today's conversation. Right now, with everything that people are talking about with respect to 45 and what he wants to do, so many people that I speak to from other communities.
Wait, who's for Donald Trump?
Yes. And older black folks, they're like, yo, but it's democracy. Democracy is on the line. Democracy is on the ballot. And what Tremaine and I are trying to explain to people, to Shawnee's very point, and he articulated it beautifully, If you don't feel like democracy has ever worked for you worth a damn, mm-hmm. then you're not invested in protecting it.
That's right.
Because it hasn't served you. And that's a disconnect that I think that some of these campaigns need to really understand in terms of their messaging and how they're articulating things. And many of these electeds also need to understand you are not creating a winning argument or a compelling argument by saying democracy is on the ballot when democracy ain't meant nothing for us.
Well, and also Democrats do horrible messaging.
And terrible messengers.
Yeah, terrible messengers. They're too nerdy and polite. We feel like you're double talking. You're not answering questions straight up. You're playing games, and people want straight answers, which mm-hmm. is why a lot of people sort to Donald Trump, is because whether they think he's telling the truth or not is a different conversation.
It feels straight
from
up.
The fact that he's yeah. being direct yeah. about what he's saying.
He says what he means, and he doesn't follow through.
Right. And so I think people are like, okay, well, if that's what it is, at least I know where you stand. Yeah. Because when you're talking about black men, we're already accustomed to thinking everyone don't like us anyway. So we're already figuring out how to survive with the world that don't like us.
Right.
So another guy that don't like us, all right, cool. You know what I'm saying? Y'all tried to kill us six different ways from Sunday, right? We still here. We still yeah. trying to figure it out. So we not really scared of bro anyway. At Shawnee can tell you, the first thing I did when we walked in, when we found out Donald Trump had won the election, was the first thing I did. And y'all was
but
all
was
mad.
Was like, good for you?
I laughed.
I wasn't mad,
Rose
but they was
mad.
Yeah, people
how
was intense.
You laughing? I was like, this is what America deserves, bro. Yeah.
This is what you wanted.
This is what,
learn the
no,
hard lessons.
You got what you deserved. Yeah. What did I say when they was plotting January 6th on Twitter? And they were saying, we was on the air like, yo, they talking about something crazy finna happen January 6th. And everybody was like, yeah, they about to turn up. What did I say?
Remind me.
I want to see it.
Oh, yeah,
but
yeah,
but you know
yeah.
the problem with that
I was on the air like, yo, they saying y'all
but then once
out,
they do it.
I want to see it.
But then well, once you well, see it, you don't really, you know.
No, when I saw it, I was like, yo.
They really did it.
Black folks, oh, they would have had the snipers oh, yeah, on the so, and they would have been
January
clapping us
been
straight.
January 6th would have been 40 minutes that'd long. But the fact that we would have been out there and gathered, it would have been like, nah, hold on.
Right.
Hold who would have said, nah, hold on?
I'm saying if we had gathered in mass.
Oh, yeah, no, they would have snipers on the roof. I've been in D.C. for different marches. Snipers on the roof.
With all the broken
organizers would have been trying to get permits. You don't ask permission right. to do what you got
to do.
But the problem is, America most certainly will always get what it deserves and get what it wants. But I don't think we fully understand the erosion of actually what's happening here and what's actually at stake. As long as they keep moving that bar and keep challenging it, it's only as sturdy and as good as our belief in it. Mm-hmm. The Supreme Court is losing credibility because they get paid off. You look at the presidency and that the White House, it's losing credibility. And so don't be surprised. Donald Trump said, I'll be a dictator. On day one.
For one day.
You know what he's going to do? He's already calling for retribution against his enemies.
Yeah.
As long as these institutions, whether as failed and flawed as they are.
And I say it again. I want to see it.
But don't
we want to see it? Do we really
want
to
see
it?
It's the only way, y'all, it's the only way the conversation that we're having right now actually impacts people in a real way where they start understanding that this shit ain't a game.
But we're not centered in that. But if we're not centered in that, then it'd be just worse for us. Because again, when America catches a cold, we catching the flu. We catching
HIV. Clearly, black people that think it's a game and think that they're going to cast their vote for someone like him need to feel that. Because unfortunately, those of us, listen man, people don't like hearing it. I say this on that radio all the time. Y'all can play around if you want to. I'm in a tax bracket. I'm going to be all right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. A lot of us, most of us ain't.
Right. And we don't. But see, the thing about it that we have to be careful with is that many of us don't necessarily have that option. And so what I try to express to people is we have to have a plan individually and collectively, regardless of what happens in November. You can't on one hand say, well, the system has never really worked for us or done what they're supposed to do. But I'm putting all of my eggs in the Biden basket or the Trump basket for that matter. Mm-hmm. Our lives are going to be determined by what it is that we do first and foremost. Yes, it may be easier or more difficult depending on who's sitting in the White House or who our elected officials are. But part of the problem is we cannot in one breath say, well, the system doesn't work for us. And then in the second breath, not create a plan for ourselves.
You know, it's just the spirit of that hammer and sickle you're talking about after Reconstruction.
Yeah,
and we've done that in so many ways. We just don't see it. There are brothers in the community every single day feeding kids, right? Organizing voter registration drives. People are actually in the community doing it. So I think you're definitely right. But I think what we also want to do is we talk to some celebrities, some high-profile politicians and everyday brothers in Chicago.
Well, right? So Sunday, February 9th, 9 p.m. on MSNBC, Black Men in America, The Road to 2024, Tremaine Lee, the brother Charles Coleman here. You guys talked to Benny the Butcher, who on Twitter said he was voting for Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Crump's on there. Al Sharpton's on there. Jeezy's on there. House Majority Leader Hakeem Jeffries. Anyone else I miss on
here? Big shout out to my brothers from Becoming a Man in Chicago. The young brothers whose name you'll never hear, but they are pulling themselves up. They are their brother's keeper, being there for each other. For me, I love the high-profile names. I love the power. I love the intellectual heft.
But you like to see the
every
work.
Single day, work. Brothers every single day for ourselves and our communities. That's as important as anything.
Mm-hmm. And I had an opportunity to talk to my MSNBC colleague, Michael Steele, and my man, Jerron Smith.
Michael Steele used to be the Republican
for Republican National Committee chair, and we talked about Black Republicans. Yeah. We have a whole conversation that we laid it out about Black men who are aligned with the Republican Party, and I think it's going to be very interesting because when you think of Republicans, when you think of Black men in the Republican Party, I think people get a particular image about being disconnected from the realities of
Black people
how
have been
we
Republicans
live.
For a long
right.
time,
and
bro.
So. The way that they lay out that conversation, I think, is going to open some people's minds. So that's also going to be a very interesting part of the special as well.
I do want to kind of beat this drum, though, because this road to 2024, while I love that you guys are doing it, I hope that NBC comes back around and continues this conversation, because here's why. For Black people, it ain't about the federal election. It's not about the national. It's not about national. It is about our neighborhoods, our cities, and our schools. Right? We're fortunate to live, I don't know where y'all live, but we live here in the tri-state. Right?
Right in Brooklyn. Brooklyn,
yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, this area, we live in a bubble. You know, you go to Brooklyn, it's Black schools. It's Black run schools. It's Black schools targeted to Black individualism and Black nationalism.
Big shout out to PS11.
Boom. That are public schools. Right? Like, we here have done work over generations to carve out spaces that we fight for, right, on a local level, right? But, you know, this national conversation, I always feel like it leads us into chaos and confusion. And I don't think we see each other or hear about, like you said, the work happening in Chicago or the work happening in a city like Philly. Or, you know, shout to my brother Black Thought, you know, who gets people out to vote on local elections in Philly and, you know, is constantly doing work, right? So I think that's kind of missed. So once again, we don't see each other enough.
When Tremaine and I had this conversation, like, I just want to point this out, right? So you talked about representation, you talked about seeing each other, and you talked about our voices. Right now on cable news, there's no Black man that's on primetime TV, period. After Don Lemon left, there's no Black man that's on primetime TV. Now we've got Jonathan Capehart and we've got Reverend Al.
Are we watching primetime TV, though?
Well, I mean, that's the question. Like, our demographic, the men who are in this room, Shani, Ebro, Tremaine, myself, our demographic in terms of just across the spectrum, not necessarily our race, but it's been shown that for a number of years, the leading news source for our demographic was actually The Daily Show, which is wild. Mm.
Jon Stewart.
Right, which is wild, right? But part of that is credibility.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is like being a trusted messenger where you are able to say, I'm going to listen to Ebro because I know he's going to get the narrative right.
Mm-hmm.
I know when he unpacks this story, Tremaine is going to tell the truth and he's going to understand the way that I am looking at it so that when he asks questions, he's thinking about the things that are on my mind. Mm-hmm. I say all that to say, when Tremaine and I sat down, funny enough, like we had never met. We were familiar with each other's work, but we had a very similar idea. And what that told me instantly was we got something that people really want to see because we know in our conversations, siloed as they may be, we're saying the same things and we want to hear all of the things that Ebro was just talking about. We're looking for somebody to tell those stories and to have those stories amplified. So real talk, you know, when we sat down, went back to the boss lady, shout out Rashida Jones, president of MSNBC. We went out, went back down, sat with Rashida. She was like, all right. Because that was where you talked about Ebro, that was like where we started.
She's like, go do something.
She was like, go do something. And she was like, I just need you to, she was like, I need you to make it work within the space of politics in 2024. Mm. But our hope and our prayer is once they see this work on Sunday and once this drops, they're gonna be like, oh nah, we
and who,
need,
who
we
better
need
to, who honestly better to do it? My man, a civil rights attorney, working in those levers of power. Me, 20 years in the game, telling our stories, intentionally telling our stories and centering us. And back to what you said earlier about this idea of getting lost in the national, a lot of people, and sometimes some people in our newsroom, some people in you know, middle class people, watch this as it's a horse race because it doesn't affect them.
Right.
It actually affects us. But if you run behind this horse, you won't step in something.
That's right.
Right? So you got to get ground level and understand how the mechanisms of power in politics actually work.
It's facts.
Yes, sir.
Listen, Black Men in America, the Road to 2024, I think something else that needs to be tapped into because I know they're going to give you extra episodes is how these things affect Black men and their families.
Yo, man.
Right. So how invisible we are on a national level, right, also affects how we're seen in our communities mm-hmm. locally, how we're seen right. in our households. And, you know, for generations, emasculating and devaluing the Black man has been how they fractured the Black family.
Bruh.
So when we're not a part of these conversations, when we're not seen mm-hmm. as valuable to the greater ecosystem, whether that be local or national, that further fractures our households.
The way America sees us and the way we see ourselves, so often, and we work in a news business, where it's only through the lens of pathology. It's always, we're talked about, and this is one thing that, and again, I've been around long enough, I'm a veteran, I can say this, sitting back and watching white folks talk about us in a very specific kind of way, mm-hmm. that's only your only intention to speak about us or in our communities, our experience, is through the lens of the carceral system and incarceration, or when our bodies
or charity.
Are charity, or our bodies are baking under the sun, dead from a police bullet, then you want to talk about us? Oh, the black man, come on now.
Or the performative side, right? Yeah. We're great on basketball, the NFL, right, you know, right. all the magical things that we're able to do because of our physicalities, et cetera, et cetera.
I think that you really did hit at the heart of what the vision for the project is overall, like as a franchise, like getting more real estate for us means we get to really take a deep dive on Black men and fatherhood. We get mm-hmm. to really take a deep dive on some of the nuances around, you know, Tremaine and I have talked about education. We've talked about the economy. Like, for example, and this is my man's joint, so I don't really want to step on his toes here, but there's all this conversation a lot about like the working man, the working class, right? But within that, there's a subset of conversations that exist around Black men in that space, Black people in that space.
How are you going to talk about Ohio and Youngstown without talking about Black people? That becomes the poster child for, oh, the white working class. Youngstown is a majority Black city. Mm. There are people who came up from the South, end up in Gary, Indiana, mm-hmm. in Milwaukee, in mm-hmm. Chicago, in Detroit,
I said the same thing to myself when they was just recently talking about Iowa. I was like, y'all didn't stop by Waterloo.
Yeah, you didn't go to Waterloo, 16%
Black,
right?
A higher percentage of Black people than the national average.
And not even that. You didn't even go to the projects in Ankeny, because there are projects right there
right.
that are chock full
Big
of us.
Big shout out to the homie Nicole Hannah-Jones from Waterloo. Yeah, Waterloo.
Shout out Nicole Hannah-Jones. The other thing that I think is important is that there's a lot of nuance to some of these issues, right? So when we talk about in mass, the Democratic staple, one of the Democratic staples around like two-way Second Amendment is generally speaking different gun laws and more, they call it sensible gun control. It's not necessarily wrong with that.
No.
But if you are a father of four in the middle of Chicago, where there's a ton of urban gun violence, right? You may be looking at that as a different issue in some respects, not because you don't intend to follow the law, not because you don't intend to be law abiding or you have any reason to misuse it, but you're thinking about it in the context of protecting my family. Mm-hmm. That's a very different type of discussion.
We are the only ones they talk about in terms of limiting some of our rights
mm-hmm.
as Black people. And again, this is not me being pro-gun or anti-gun, but I'm saying is if we are reaching for full citizenship, which we've never experienced in this country, I would argue Black people are not full citizens mm-hmm. and we have to fight for it every single time.
Mm-hmm.
That why would we be excluded or exclude ourselves or allow politicians to exclude us from certain rights? Especially when our lives, we are so much more likely to die by police violence,
sure.
community violence. Why wouldn't someone from the Democratic Party, perhaps the left, be speaking more specifically to that issue around Black men in second?
It's an example of the nuanced conversations that we would like to explore because they deserve a much more definitive and a deeper dive in terms of its treatment, education, all of these things. the point that I wanted to lay out very early on in this special and in this franchise is, when you ask the average voter, what are the three biggest things that are on your mind? You're not going to get all the time hugely different answers, but what they mean and how they express themselves are extremely different. So if I said, are you concerned about the economy? Shani might be like, yeah. If I go out and I ask, you know, someone else a couple blocks away from here, are you concerned about the economy? They're going to say, yeah. What things cost and all of that matters. But the way it shows up for Shani or you or me is very different. And that's what we're trying to explain. The issues are the same, but the way they look and the way they manifest are extremely different. And they do it in a way that many people may not be thinking.
We are not a monolith, no. Right? There is a lot of gray area. And the intentionality it takes to go to the people. And so that's what we're doing with this special. We're actually going out to black men specifically. And also, our team behind the scenes, the producers.
Shout out Raylan Johnson. Shout out Tamisha Harris.
This is probably the blackest team I've ever worked with at MSNBC.
Shout out Omanyeya. Shout out everybody.
So are you saying to us right now that MSNBC cares about black men and our opinion?
Well, I'm gonna say without question, yes. Because they don't have to do this. These networks can do whatever they want. For Rashida Jones, and again, I hate having to clap the thing, but no, real talk, our president of MSNBC, Rashida Jones, sat down with us, gave us the green light, didn't have her hands all on it, said, y'all brothers know what you're doing. Go out there and tell a story that's important and connects to the energy around the election. So I would say that, you know, in this moment, we are in position to tell stories that have not been told on that network.
I'm gonna pull a semi-bald one on you. I can't tell you what MSNBC does or does not care about.
But what I can tell you
is that after you watch this special on Sunday, you will be very clear there isn't anything and there hasn't been anything like this on any other cable news network. So for them to give us an hour, for them to give us a budget, for them to allow us to do the work that we wanted to do on this project, I can't tell you where their hearts are. I can tell you where they were allowing us to get airtime and advertise the sponsorship and do all the things that are necessary.
And come for the news, stay for the beards. It's mad black beards in the building.
Correct. There's a lot of beard action. Sisters, there's a lot of beard action.
I'm happily married. Not me, though. Not for me. I'm saying general.
Just saying.
A lot of beard action on the show.
We know y'all like them.
No, but yeah. I mean, so.
But you know.
Reconnect with CUNY. Whether you are a first-time college student, a parent, a veteran, or an adult with some college credits, there's a place for you to continue your dreams or start fresh. No matter where you are along your journey, the CUNY Reconnect program can provide financial assistance and one-on-one personalized support to get you going. It's not too late to start again. Go to cuny.edu/reconnect today.
Women love seeing black men have information, application of information and wisdom and knowledge, care for their communities and families. Like that's something that women love because they see men activating around future and family planning. Because that's what voting is.
Right.
Voting is hiring individuals to do specific jobs for a term limit, for a limit of time. For you to execute, because I have to go to work.
Yeah.
And so I need you to go on the local level, state level, federal level, to make sure that the money they taken from my check
is properly
comes back into my community the way it needs to benefit my family.
Yeah.
That is what, for me, voting is about.
That's a great sales pitch right there, because I don't think we talk enough about
I love that.
This is for future security, to make sure. Sometimes it's very granular, like my schools, the economy, the job. But no, this is family planning. This is future planning for our community.
Yes.
So let me ask you, when it comes to politicians and the promises that we hope that they're going to keep up, how do we hold them accountable?
And also understand,
because we often feel like we're let down.
Me and Shani debate this a lot.
That's a great question.
We need to start using a different word other than promise.
I'm gonna talk.
This is the promises they make.
I'm gonna respond, but
I'm gonna toss this to you.
But real quick though, can we start calling people out and say that's a nice proposal? It's not a promise. You can't keep it.
You got to understand
what
they do.
There's too many factors.
You
got to
understand their job.
For you, I know that people don't want to hear proposal. They want to hear promise so they can hold you accountable. But we can't, other than getting you out and electing someone else.
But you got to understand what the limitations are. So obviously we don't want the president of the United States making promises he cannot keep, that I'm a center blackness and I'm going to do all these things.
Right.
When it takes Congress. And so then we need to understand that.
In order
to
hold them, president,
but then if we need to understand that, they have to, they should say it differently. Because if it say, I promise when I get in office, or this is what I'm going to do, then you're lying if you know already that there's...
Sometimes they are.
So, there's red tape in front of you.
Well, now
when
that,
you actually
now,
make
and
it
I'd
happen.
Be fine with they say, I promise my priority will yeah. be. I like think, that.
I like that.
Because I could be like, let me see if you're prioritizing yeah. that.
Our,
but stop telling me you're going to get something done
right.
when you can't really get the shit done.
Because then people don't trust you, and it makes them not necessarily want to support dudes after you
right.
either.
I think that the first thing you got to think about in terms of accountability is making yourself valuable to the system beyond your vote. So we can't have this conversation about the political system without discussing the amount of money that's in politics. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be a multi-million dollar person to have a voice or to make a difference, but you do got to be organized. So if your local politician knows, on my block, we formed a political action committee. What is a political action committee? It allows you to give a certain amount of money that, you know, it has different rules than if you're giving as an individual.
And by the way, when y'all see the word PAC on
correct.
Something, that's what that is. Political
PAC
action
or
committee.
Super PAC, that's exactly what yeah. it is, right? So our block has a political action committee. And we all agree that we're going to donate $10 a week to this PAC. And that we're going to support local candidates, whatever. Well, now, when you talk about accountability, you're not doing what I need you to do. You're not doing what you said you're going to do. I don't know mm-hmm. whether our PAC is giving you. It may not be a ton of money, but think about it. If you think about it this way, we're not donating money to candidates that we want to lose. So we're going to be donating money to candidates that we are trying to help win. So that means that not only am I giving you money, but I'm going to vote. Because I don't want my money wasted. Mm-hmm. And then I'm probably encouraging other people I know to go vote for you because I also don't want my money wasted. You want to give all that up, Mr. Candidate, by not doing what you... That's how you start building measures for accountability.
Let me ask this, John. Obviously, we're here to be interviewed by you guys. But what is the approach to a lot of brothers who are completely checked out because they do not believe in the system? They do not believe that a country founded on white supremacy will ever do anything for us. So when you look at turnout mm-hmm. in Philadelphia, I love Philly. I love Pennsylvania. When you look at some of the turnout numbers, a lot of black folks are just not turning out, have checked out, have taken an off-ramp. So what is the message? Not necessarily saying, hey, you have to prove yourself to them
sure.
and show your value and hold them accountable with your dollars. But those who have checked out because they don't see their day-to-day lives, regardless of the election cycle, ever
change.
I think interpersonally, right, if you're someone who cares about community, regardless of the politics of it, you need to be willing to challenge your brothers to say, like, all right, cool. You're not messing with it. I get it. What's your plan? We're not talking about voting. What's your plan? You just gonna stay here? You gonna sit here?
Most of their plan is to try to get the bag and move away from that area.
Sure, but okay. So let's
conceptually.
Talk about it. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about how do we? But that would be my response. Let's talk about it. So this is just good for you and your family. That's it. All you care about is your family.
They like it.
Yes.
And I think you're right. And I think Ebro, that's one of the things that has been. That's miffed me about black men for the past like 10 to 15 years. I've been really thinking about that. Our investment in what it means to be in community has to evolve.
So I had a lot of blowback because I was on the air and I said, too many black men think they're white men. Y'all trying to be white men. And you don't think that your future and your child's future is tied to someone who looks like you. Even on a global scale, when we talk about Pan-Africanism, and as Africa goes, so do black people in America and black people around the globe, right? When Africa is powerful and seen as a location on the map that has wealth and stability and has some, global economic prowess, the view of other black people will change as we deal with white supremacy and how that goes. We are all interconnected. Most black people, well, let me not say most, too many
mm-hmm.
black people don't see that value, right? Because we live in a capitalist society that is white supremacist and white dominant, and it's not like that for them. And so we think that is applicable to us. And
that's
it's not.
We think that's our motto.
The one thing that, one of those stats that always shocked me is the likelihood of your children making less than you and falling back. Upward mobility in our community is nil because we don't have anything to pass on. We have an inherited wealth. We talk about housing as a driver of wealth. Housing in America is the wealth, right? And so if you're trying to play this funny game, your kid, whether it's how this is being seen by the police or the credit bureau or the loan manager or the originator trying to get that house, it's so much more fragile, right? So we can play these games if we want. But to your point, in centering community first and how do we make decisions for the best for all of us. But again, we're in survival mode. And so it's hard to convince that brother who is scrambling. He is just trying to get that bread and move on.
Yeah, and you need shows like yours that are giving different types of exposure, right? Because everything that we've been brainwashed with, and we can't deny the television brainwashing us, if you look at it, go back to the Jeffersons, he left the hood.
Yeah.
You look at Different Strokes, they got out of the hood. You look at Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, they've all left the hood. There's no reflection of going back and trying to, it's like assimilate into these whiter, brighter neighborhoods and just get your money right is what we've been shown on TV for a long time.
Well, one of the things it goes back to what Ebro said about, his flex on the tax bracket, all jokes aside.
Listen, if y'all gonna be out here wilding and not listening, bro,
get some money and leave out and move out the hood.
But one thing,
this what you saying too?
Y'all not playing. Y'all not seeing the game. Y'all not seeing the game, bro.
That's the game, and that's what most people in the hood feel is the game.
We want
get your money. Look, I'm gonna be over.
No. When I say they not seeing the game, they're not seeing how we're all interconnected, and when we work together, we can force the systems. If we are coherent, logical, and informed, and we lock in with one another just on our mutual struggle.
Correct.
Not religion.
Right.
Not even political affiliation. None of that. On what we are trying to accomplish as melanated people in a society that was not designed
for you know the problem is? You know the problem is? It's middle class black people. Right? I went to South Africa for 2 weeks this summer, and when you see that there are still, there's barbed wire, and there's high fences, and there's the townships, and then there are black folks here. And I say the only thing standing between the people rising up and the powerful are the black people who can benefit most from the situation.
Right, because they wanted to stay status quo.
And that's us here, because, man, I'm not member of CMC, man, you can't come here making all this noise, man, I'm about to get fired.
Right.
So we are.
I'm going to lose my job.
It's us, because there will be these political proxies who go out to kind of calm the waters. And not saying we want any violence or loss of life or loss of anything, but there are people who go out there and say, hey, don't be too mad about this. We talked about establishing lines. What happens when you cross that line? Yeah. What happens when you continue to deny people? Mm-hmm. At what point is there a real reckoning, whether it be political or otherwise, right?
Well, one thing that, this conversation makes me proud about as I, I'm eagerly anticipating Sunday and the release of the special is the breadth of real diversity that's represented in the conversations. Right. Because we all have different perspectives and we all come from different walks of life, whether that's regionally, whether that's socioeconomic or culturally in terms of like, your family may have a different background from the Caribbean. You might be directly from the continent. I might be Black American, FBA, ADOS, however you want to call it. That is really important because sometimes in today's dialogue, to your earlier point, Tremaine, we think of like issues around black men. Damn, they get shot by police. That's terrible. Or this sort of like downtrodden narrative around how we show up. And there's nothing that isn't valid about how those stories need to be told. But at the same time, to the conversation we was having before we got on, I've never been to jail, respectfully. Don't mean I can't go. Don't mean that, that could change.
It's a constant cloud.
It's a constant thing that I think about, but at the same time.
And just for the audience, just know we was talking about knocking somebody out and the fact that person looked threatening, a Navy SEAL who was a racist.
Correct.
Just to give y'all a full
just
play.
To give y'all full context.
Listen, if you got
to
put the paws on him, just don't let him grab you, knock him out, because he a Navy SEAL. And you're going to be all right, because you ain't got no pride.
There you go. So,
and I felt threat.
But in terms of the conversations that impact us in community, they're at a lot of different levels, right? So people make the mistake of thinking, you multi-degreed or what have you. You work for, so-and-so, and so-and-so, LLP at a law firm. You ain't got to deal with the same issues I got to deal with. Actually, I do.
Right,
like actually, my navigation is, it looks a little bit different than yours, but there's still a navigation. And I think that, you know, for anybody who's responsible for messaging, responsible for policy, responsible for actually advising elected officials, they need to see something like this so they can say, like, yeah, okay, so police reform, that's what you're going to do for us? What else?
Reconnect with CUNY. Whether you are a first-time college student, a parent, a veteran, or an adult with some college credits, there's a place for you to continue your dreams or start fresh. No matter where you are along your journey, the CUNY Reconnect program can provide financial assistance and one-on-one personalized support to get you going. It's not too late to start again. Go to cuny.edu/reconnect today.
There's a lot of other things we're concerned about. What else you got?
And not, and, you know, you mentioned this earlier, and not disassociating yourself from the people, right? I mean, I think there is that impulse, the same way get out the hood and go to a nice neighborhood. There is, like, you rise up in the ranks, and I'm dressed nice, and now those people, we're different. Mm-hmm. And again, we all come from different walks of life, but it's important for us to always hinge to the heartbeat of the people. Because a lot of times, it's not that people don't have a voice, it's that these systems have intentionally muted those voices. And so when we get these mics and we get the cameras and we have this platform to be here with y'all and telling New York City about what's going on with the special, it's important for us to always, when they see us, that they see the people. And again, we are varied. We are multidimensional. There are multitudes within us, whether it's the hood, a middle class, a wealthy. Make sure that they see a block, because we are so separate and there is no strength to separate.
Yeah. Listen, Black Men in America, the road to 2024 is Tremaine Lee. That's Charles Coleman Jr. over there. These brothers clearly know what they're doing, and we're going to see what they deliver on Sunday.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
MSNBC.
Yes, sir.
And well, so we need some social assets, all right? So just to be clear, I need some sort of something that helps me, you know, because you know what's going to happen. We need to get this thing trending.
Yes, sir.
We need
to get
this thing moving. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Black people are the most engaged group on social media.
We
got the ability to move things around. And so let's see.
We got you. We got some key art that's amazing. We're going to have some clips. You know, they're running promos on the network now, but we're going to get you the social stuff, some clips and you know, so you can really get that out there and let me see the
numbers. Let me see
as we wrap,
this is like a proof of concept. Mm-hmm. So let's make sure that we're voting with our numbers and the numbers.
As we wrap, we'll start with you, Tremaine. What is your opinion of the work the Biden-Harris administration has done so far?
Now, what I would say from my position as a journalist and correspondent for MSNBC, I think that the one thing that we can say, and this has been a concern for a lot of people, is when he was inaugurated, he said, I'm going to make racial and social justice not just a hallmark, but a center of my administration. Mm-hmm. And he has early on pushed and tried to center, you know, our communities. But I think for too many black people,
it's not enough.
It's not enough. And it hasn't been enough.
What about for you and what you understand?
You know, I think that broadly, I think this is a flawed system. And so I'm not clear that any of this will ever serve black people, honestly and truly. Because again, the way I view our experience in America is that we're not full citizens yet. And so has this administration served us more than the one before? No. But I don't know if none of them, because our people, when you look at sheer numbers, whether it's white folks having 10 times the wealth of black people, when you look at the rates at which we're dying from disease, when you look at the rate at which we are incarcerated or killed by the police, or a growing number killed by suicide, or killed by a bullet or a blood clot, the way we're dying from cardiac arrest. So that's where I look at this. So we're always putting pressure on all the systems and making sure that we're telling the truth. So it's not in my, you know, place as a journalist to say how I feel about this administration. Mm-hmm. But writ large, I don't think the system served us very well.
I'll say just caveat there that this particular Justice Department, the Department of Justice, the amount of cases that they brought against police departments at the state level for their racist behavior is higher than any other administration that I think we've seen in recent history, according to reports.
Well,
and now for you, Charles, how is, in your opinion, the Biden-Harris administration doing so far?
Well, I ain't a journalist.
You
can say whatever I want to say.
I can walk up that line and step on back. You can say what you want to do, brother.
I think that the Biden administration has been good for America. I think that I think it's very, very different when you're having a conversation about black America. Because, and people sort of conflate the two. I think that when it comes to black America, there is some spillover. So if you improve infrastructure, if you improve prescription drugs, and we're adversely affected by that.
But did our businesses get them federal contracts?
Correct. So there is some spillover in some areas, and in other areas, there isn't. I think that the Biden administration, particularly because this began way before Kamala and the vice president became a part of, well, Vice President Kamala Harris became a part of the administration. Joseph Biden has to be, President Joseph Biden has to be very honest about his missteps with our community before we can take him seriously. I think that there are a lot of people who still harbor a lot of resentment about what some of his actions as a senator for 40 years meant for our community well before he got to be president. And we can't cognitively get past that. So from a messaging standpoint, there has to be a little bit more of an acknowledgement before we can really process what's happening current day. Because it's like, well, yeah, you did this in the past 4 years, but the 40 before that.
The racial jungle.
Yeah, it was
now,
a monster
clarity,
out there.
The racial jungle comment.
That's
based,
not the only one. It's the super predators. The super. You got the super predators. You have his issue on busing as a senator. I don't want to necessarily run down his tour.
Well, no,
history
the only reason
race.
I want it because it does come up, and we're here, and you talk about the road to 24. The racial jungle comment. The context was that he didn't feel that bringing black children and busing them in
the busing issue
was that our society was ready for that.
Right. That was his comment.
But the jungle word makes it feel like it was directly at black folks.
Yeah.
But the truth was, so I read, that he was saying, if you watch the whole clip, which I don't think most people have, it was an argument that we don't have systems in place to make sure that this doesn't come chaotically racial and tense.
This isn't a shot at Joe Biden, but historically the idea that we're just not ready for you guys to have equality yet.
Right.
We're just not ready to have you have access issue. To the separate unequal. Right. And we're just not ready yet because America, we are just not ready to do that. So, yes.
Is he wrong?
He's not.
Was he wrong?
Was he wrong? Because I'll tell you something. Unpopular. When Obama was running, what did I say? America ain't ready. Why? Because the response to Obama clearly showed America did not really like.
But it's very, but it's important that you understand something.
Yeah.
You saying that America isn't ready as someone who exists on one side of that power structure and understands it differently is very different than someone who's in control
that's
of
right.
the power
saying
structure.
Saying we're not ready.
Saying
for
you're
sure.
not ready.
For
because
sure.
you not have ready. The ability to force the readiness, whether it's, I forget the governor who in Mississippi had to call in troops with James Neighbors at Ole Miss. Yeah. But whether you have the you when you are part of that
right.
part of that structure, you have the ability to say, actually, we're gonna get ready. If that requires the National Guard, we're gonna use the National Guard.
What you got though was segregation today,
segregation
tomorrow,
right.
segregation
that's
forever. That's
right. George Wallace.
Wendell running for president and getting a lot of black votes. They had an assassination attempt and they shot him. And after that, he came out and went to his black voters, and a lot of black people actually voted for him.
But yeah, to answer your question,
a wild twist.
To answer your question, Ebro, the Biden administration has been aight. Has it earned a second tenure office? Depends who you talk to. I think that ultimately, it is really going to be about the messaging. I think that there has been a lot of conversation that has been very clear about why people may not prefer another term of 45, which is fine if that's, you know, that's where you want to sort of push your agenda. But that's still not enough for a lot of us. And Shani's earlier point really like hits home. Okay, cool. You've convinced me why 45 is not the guy. But why have you convinced me, or how have you convinced me to get up out of my bed and actually vote for you? Especially like in New York. 45 ain't winning New York, right?
Right.
Like, we know this, right? 45's not winning New York. He's probably not winning New Jersey, and he's probably not winning Connecticut. So you got the tri-state right there. So if I'm a listener, right, and I'm thinking about, well, I know my vote here in this jurisdiction, chances are he's not going to win anyway. How have you motivated me, given that, to actually get up, go to the polls, and vote?
Because don't mean you'll go vote for the other guy. It means you might not vote at all.
That's the issue.
Right. And if you
That's
shave
the real
off
issue.
Margin by margin, shave that off, and then you end up with.
So the number was 7 million, the popular vote, the distance between the two. The key cities last time were Philly, Milwaukee, Detroit, right?
Black cities.
So for this to be something different, let's call it, let's say 2 million people flip. Another 2 million stay home.
You don't need that many. We talked to Cornell Belcher about this. He's a Democratic strategist and pollster. He gave us a statistic that blew my mind. If 10% of black men in these swing states stay home, it's over.
That's it.
You don't even need that many that you was talking about. 10%.
Because the swing numbers states.
In the swing states.
Right? The numbers in Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan were so tight. Like, you're talking, what, 100,000 here, 10,000 there.
10% stay home?
And that's what they're gunning for. Because the GOP ain't trying to grow.
No. They win.
They want to cause confusion, apathy.
They win by subtraction, not by addition. That's right. Cornell's joint. They don't win by adding people. They just win by getting you to stay home.
And,
you
know, and through that lens, they may have already won.
You know how emboldened a certain segment of the population is going to be if Donald Trump is reelected? Right? Regardless of where we stand. Remember that what happened that first time. It doesn't mean that if you vote for Trump that you're a white supremacist, but a white supremacist is voting for Trump.
That's right.
Right? They're going to be off the chain. Can you imagine?
Are they going to celebrate in the streets?
An unleashed Donald Trump, not bound by anything. He already told you what he's going to do. And that's where, obviously.
And then all of the cases that he got go on pause so he never see jail.
Oh, I
got
to give
him. And I done told y'all from the rip, if he don't go to jail and or lose a lot of money, America is washed. Because you will have a continual repeat of this individual until.
Forever. There was a point
or
you
this
made.
This type of individual, not him per se, but this type.
Everybody's
of
Everybody's trying to be Trump light. Everybody is also falling in line. All the other politicians we see on the right.
I do have to give a real quick acknowledgement, a real quick shout out. You talked about the numbers of police investigations that have occurred at DOJ. That is because of one reason only. I'm really clear about this. Kristen Clark, who is the head of the DOJ Civil Rights Organization. She's a black woman. She's from New York. She is from Brooklyn. She's from the Bronx. She's an amazing sister. A young sister. This woman is barely, I don't think Kristen is 50 yet. She has done amazing work with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, and then now is DOJ. She's the reason.
They've tried her, too.
They have tried her. So I got to give a shout out to her. Like, this is not to take anything away from the administration or from Merrick Garland. Obviously, they had to be in a position to get her appointed. But for anybody who doesn't know, that black woman is the reason that we have seen this many investigations and prosecutions of police departments across the country.
She's been a real deal.
Shout out to Kristen. Yes, she is. Yep. She's like that. Kristen is like that.
Black Men in America, the Road to 2024, MSNBC, this Sunday, 9 p.m. Charles and Tremaine, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us, bro.
Yes, real talk.
Reconnect with CUNY. Whether you are a first-time college student, a parent, a veteran, or an adult with some college credits, there's a place for you to continue your dreams or start fresh. No matter where you are along your journey, the CUNY Reconnect program can provide financial assistance and one-on-one personalized support to get you going. It's not too late to start again. Go to cuny.edu/reconnect today.